Welcome to the Hope After Child Loss podcast, where we endeavor to offer stories of hope to grieving parents and siblings so that they might rediscover life filled with meaning, purpose, and hope. We invite you to come and join us. Hello, welcome to today's episode of Hope After Child Loss. I'm your host, Greg Bufkin, and we are so glad you joined us today. I'm very excited to be able to introduce my guest, Jennifer Bullock Moore. Jennifer is, maybe I should refer to her as Jen. I think she gave me permission to do that early on.
Yeah, we've gotten to know each other, so Jen is good.
Yes, we have. Great. Well, Jen is the news anchor of the NBC affiliate in Columbus, Ohio, where she and her family currently live. So, Jen, welcome to today's podcast. So good to have you.
I am so honored to be here, Greg. Very excited to share with everyone.
Great. Well, the honor is ours. And before we dive into your story, Jen, I'd like for you just to take a couple of minutes and tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, anything you would like to share about your family as well.
Yeah, so I am born and raised in Zanesville, Ohio, which is just down the road from Columbus. My husband and I met when we were 19 years old, little college kids, and we have been together ever since. And we have three beautiful, incredible children. Our oldest is turning 7 very soon, and his name is Noah. And then we have a 4-year-old named Harper, and she is as feisty could possibly be. She runs the house and keeps us all in control. And then our sweet boy, Miles, who is in the arms of Jesus. And yes, that was in 2021. And, you know, born and raised as a pastor's daughter, still attend my family's church every Sunday. And that's the real job. Ministry is the real job. And then I just happen to be a news anchor as well.
Yeah. Oh, by the way. Yeah. Yeah. That's funny about your 4-year-old. It's funny how they typically do often run the household.
Yes, she does.
And did she get that feistiness from you or from your husband?
It's funny. My husband likes to say it comes from all the women in my family. We're very vocal. We're very sweet, and we're very nurturing. But, you know, don't push us. We don't like to be pushed. So, yeah, for me, it's a little more dormant. For Harper, it's a little more out front.
Yeah. Well, I think then you are obviously in the right profession.
I think so. It's worked out.
Being very vocal.
It's worked out well so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that is great. Well, with three little ones that age, it sounds like you guys live very busy lives.
We are very active constantly. You know, Noah's in first grade. Harper is preparing for kindergarten. And I'm working full time. My husband is a full time dad. So he is the one.
Wow.
He's got the harder job.
Indeed, he does.
But he does such a great job taking care of our little ones. And we've made it work, and we've figured it out. And a lot of it has had to do with staying grounded in our faith and trusting God. But he hasn't failed us yet. So we're just going to keep moving forward.
Yeah, he's pretty good at that, isn't he?
Yeah, he's figured that out too.
Yeah, he's proven himself to be pretty trustworthy.
Yes.
From personal experience.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and I know that you will testify to that as well. And you've got quite a story to share. And for those of you who are listening today, the reason that I asked Jen to join us and is to share the story about her son, Miles, that she mentioned just a few minutes ago, who's waiting for his family in heaven.
Yeah.
So, Jen, why don't you just take the next few minutes and tell us about that story that led to you sharing with us today?
Yeah. So, it was my third pregnancy, and we were not planning for a third child, at least not at that point in time. My youngest wasn't even 2 years old yet, Harper. She wasn't even 2. We were still living in a townhouse, and, you know, I was figuring out my job, and planning for him, but got the unexpected and wonderful surprise. I was a little frantic when I first saw the positive pregnancy test, but my husband, as always, keeps me super grounded, and he said, "We'll figure it out. We've figured it out to this point, and if we can just share more of this love that our family has, then that's what we're going to do." So, yeah, we just prepared like anyone would through our pregnancy journey. We had a great experience. I really didn't have any issues at all through my pregnancy. And honestly, it was probably the easiest pregnancy of the three that I had had.
Really?
Yeah. It was really incredible. And it was, there were no signs that anything was going to be wrong. And then it was October of 20 expected turn.
Yeah. What exactly happened, Jen? Like you said, you up to that point, there were no indicators that there was anything wrong. So you're at, if I remember reading, you were at 33 weeks, right?
I was, yes, 33 weeks exactly.
And all of your appointments checked out. You were in good health. No issues with you either.
I was in great health. I was the healthiest I had been in a pregnancy. You know, I've had underlying heart issues, so between my other two pregnancies, doctors were constantly trying to figure out the best medications and
sure.
how to make everything work for me while also protecting the baby. And for Miles's pregnancy, we had it figured out. I was perfectly healthy. You know, I was tired from taking care of two other young ones.
Well, of course.
That's normal, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
working full time. But there were no indications. None of the appointments showed that anything was wrong at all. And then one day, it was a Saturday into Sunday night, I just woke up and I didn't feel right. I didn't feel movement. I didn't feel like I had felt. And I knew that something was really wrong.
And how close were you to the due date, Jen?
We were just over a month away from the due date. So
okay.
about a month and a half. He was born in October. His due date was November 23rd.
So you wake up then on Sunday morning and you're still feeling uncertain about things. So what do you do at this point?
As I mentioned, I'm a pastor's kid. And one thing that my family always did was we got up and we went to church, no matter what was going on for us personally.
We
got up and we went to church, and that's exactly what I did. Even though I knew something was really wrong. And I had even a Doppler device that I had been using to detect his heartbeat. And I had been doing that, you know, for the last several weeks. And I did that day, and I couldn't find one. And I knew it wasn't right.
Is that something that's done on a routine basis now, or is it because
pretty,
of your own heart issues?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty readily available. Anybody can buy one, like on Amazon or online.
And oh, gotcha.
I think it's just, you know, between appointments, it kind of gives women a little more security to know that everything's okay.
Yeah.
And I had just been doing that. And what's crazy is the day before I had went to bed, I did the Doppler and I took a recording of it. And I hadn't done that the entire time. And it turns out that that is the only recording I have of his heartbeat now.
Oh, wow. So you go to church. You're still not feeling normal. So when church is over, do you then head to the doctor's office or to the hospital, or do you make a phone call?
Yeah. So after church, we let a few very close members to us know that I wasn't feeling right and that something wasn't right. And I think in my heart I knew, but I was still hoping for a miracle. And so they prayed over me, and I immediately called my doctor, and he said, "Go straight to the hospital where you're going to deliver, tell them what's going on, and they can,"
yeah.
That's what my husband and I did. And it was kind of torturous. We still had to sit in a waiting room, and wait our turn. And this whole time, I'm just praying and crying out to God that I would feel something. anything at all.
That had to have been the longest wait of your life.
It was. It really was.
And why did they not move you closer to the front as though, and treat it as though it were maybe a near emergency, if not an emergency, if there was, if you weren't detecting anything on the Doppler?
Honestly, I don't know, but part of me looking back thinks that they probably already knew of the description of what I had said, that it had been about 24 hours and I wasn't. So I think they knew without telling me that they knew what was going on.
You may be right. So how long did you guys end up in that waiting process before you saw someone?
Yeah, so it was about 90 minutes total. And then we finally got called back to a room and the nurse put the monitors over my belly. And I think I knew at that point because she just kept trying to move the monitors, trying to find anything, any kind of sound of movement. And she just kept moving them all over my belly. And I knew that was it. And she went and got the doctor. And within minutes, the doctor came in, did the ultrasound, and said that he had passed. There was no heartbeat.
Oh, wow. So, Jen, did you then have to make an appointment because I'm sure you had to go ahead and plan on a delivery.
Yes.
So did you have to schedule that, or did that follow fairly quickly?
That followed fairly quickly. That was the one thing. They gave me options. They said you can induce labor, you can go through the process of labor, or you can do a C-section, have him delivered immediately. My two other children were C-sections, so I knew what that process was like. And I didn't want to go through the torture of labor, knowing that I would be holding a baby with no breath in his lungs. So I said I opted for the C-section, and they got me in pretty quickly, as quickly as they could. They had a couple of other emergency deliveries that had to take place. And then I was next. So it was 2 o'clock in the morning when he was delivered.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you guys had been there since early afternoon?
Yeah, we had been there since about 2 o'clock that afternoon. So it was about a 12-hour day.
Oh, gosh. Tell us a little bit about what the rest of that day was like, Jen, because I mean, you guys have had, you've been looking forward for 8 months to the birth of Miles. And I'm sure that, like most parents, you had already named him.
Yeah, we had actually just picked his middle name. We couldn't decide on a middle name, but we went with Miles Owen. Owen was my great-great-grandfather's name, and it means warrior. And so we selected his name just about a week before that. And honestly, the process was just, I was just so exhausted, but I was angry, and I felt guilt. I felt shame. I didn't know if it was anybody's fault, if I could have done anything differently, if I should have responded faster. And so then I had to call my family. I had to let them know, you know, my sister had my older two children. I had to tell them I wasn't coming home tonight because their brother passed away. And how do you explain that to a 4-year-old and an almost 2-year-old? So my husband's making all these phone calls, and I'm just kind of numb, honestly, just laying in the hospital bed. I just wanted it to be over, or I wanted God to intervene and give me a different result.
Of course.
I pretty quickly figured out that wasn't going to be the case. It was just really, it was just a heart-wrenching process.
I can only imagine. Did the two of you guys pretty much have to walk through that alone for those long hours?
Yeah, I mean, it was just the two of us in that moment. Thankfully, I'm very close to my family, my parents and my sister. And they stayed up with me, and you know, they called, they texted. They were taking care of my children, so that for me was huge. But I mean, in the hospital, it was just the two of us. We were still under COVID restrictions too. We couldn't have people coming in and out like we normally would. It was just the two of us. Yeah.
Yeah. The COVID days changed so many things, and it's, you know, that's one of the things that changed that was so hard on so many people. Yeah. They had to suffer alone.
Yeah.
A lot of times, literally alone. They had nobody with them because the hospital system wouldn't allow it.
Yes. Yeah. It was such a tough time. And even in the days after, I had to stay 3 or 4 days after to recover from major surgery. Because of COVID, I could only have two named visitors. My husband was one of them. And then we named my mom as the second. But then thankfully, because my dad is a pastor, he was my clergyman and he was able to come in as well. So I was at least able to have my parents there with my husband. And so my parents were able to see Miles and to hold him. Before we had him cremated. So I know for them, that was huge.
Yeah. I know that was a blessing to both to you and your husband, as well as to them.
Yeah.
And I know I've had a conversation with your dad, because he's going to be a guest on an upcoming episode as well. And he shared from a grandparent's perspective.
Yes.
So that was a very touching conversation that we had. So I'm thankful for you guys that your pastor slash dad and mom were able to be there. I'm sure that eased some of the suffering a little bit.
It did. And you know, it's funny too, because growing up as a pastor's kid, we've seen all the hardest parts of ministry. And I honestly never thought I'd say, thank the Lord, my dad is a pastor, until that day. And we were able to have that kind of workaround so that I could have them there with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, Jen, having grown up in the church, I mean, you're a Christian. You had two perfectly healthy children. And did Miles come in between, or was he the third?
He was the third.
He was the third.
Yeah.
So you have this perspective of, you know, everything is going well in life. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got your dream job. Mm-hmm. And
we had bought a new house too.
And just bought a new house.
Yeah.
So life is good. And then this happens.
Yeah.
As a Christian, do you feel like that your faith, your relationship with the Lord prepared you for what you were facing that day? And if so, how would you describe that? Because it's still horrendous to experience the death of a child.
Yeah. And that's just it, right? That was my first reaction, was to cry out to God. And I'll admit, I was angry with him. And he knew it. And I questioned why. And I get emotional thinking about, I said, my family's been so faithful to you and to your call for 30 plus years. We planted this church. My parents have made sacrifices. I've watched people turn on them. You know, my family has been so faithful to this call. Why would this happen to us? And so I remember I constantly questioned that, but even in the moments when I was angry and even in the moments when I doubted him, I was still talking to him. I was still communicating with him. And I think because I still knew that even though Miles was gone here on earth, this wasn't the end for us. And even though I don't get to be his mom here on earth, I'm still going to one day wake up and see his face, and we're going to be able to spend eternity together. So for me, that was the piece that, even though it took me a little while to get over the anger and the hurt, I still had that hope, that everlasting hope. And so that, I think, is what the foundation of my faith gave me, is that this is all temporal. As much as it hurts and as awful as some days are with all of this, it's just a moment before eternity.
Yeah, that is so true. And there are a couple of things that you just shared that I want to circle back to. And one is, thank you for what you just said, that as Christians, we, as Paul, I think Paul said this in one of his letters, that we don't grieve like those outside the faith grieve. That's not exactly the verbatim wording, but that's what he was saying. In Christ Jesus, we have that certain hope that we're going to see our loved one again, particularly, you know, a little child who, you know, who never had the opportunity to, you know, to live their life, but by God's grace, they are in heaven and they're waiting for mom and dad to get there one day. And for them, I'm sure that because they don't live in the past, present, and future, they live now.
Yes.
It will be a very short time. We're the ones who have to contend with that that time continuum.
Exactly. And I am at such peace knowing that even though I never got to see him open his eyes, that the first thing he saw when he opened his eyes was Jesus.
Yes, absolutely.
And perfection in paradise. And
yep.
That gives me something to keep moving toward. And just knowing that he has never known pain, he's never known heartache, he's never known frustration, he hasn't had to figure out his math homework or, you know, deal with right. bullies or anything like that. Like, he's only ever known utter perfection. And that just, these are tears of joy when I think of that.
Yeah.
And that gives me so much peace.
Yeah. And you can only experience that on the basis of a relationship with Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah. Not everybody can walk through that and experience that level of pain and suffering and 2-3 years later, say what you just said, share what, you know, what you have just shared with us.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing your heart with about that, Jen. And the other thing that I wanted to circle back to is your honesty and transparency and admitting that you were angry with God. I think sometimes I had a conversation with another guest just recently, and we talked about that same issue. You know, we often, when things like that happen, you know, it's not an unnatural response to find ourselves being angry with God, because he is sovereign over all things. And of course, he can change and do anything that he decides to do.
Right.
And so we see him with that level of power and all authority. I think, you know, you could have changed that. You could have stopped it.
Yep.
You could have, and you fill in the blank. And when it happens, we find ourselves sometimes just being very angry with him. But I think sometimes growing up in the church, and I'll say, I think maybe sometimes particularly in the polite South, that we don't want to admit that.
Yes.
And even more than that, we don't talk about that.
Right.
Because it's neither polite and it's also considered maybe disrespectful.
Right. Yeah.
To think that we would be angry. But, you know, if we stopped for half a second and thought about it, we would realize he already knows. I mean, he's
already
omniscient.
Been there. He's already seen it. And that's what I had to remind myself too. And for me, having a true relationship with God means experiencing all of those feelings, sharing all of that with him. I mean,
right.
I've been married coming up on 8 years, and I tell my husband, like, well, what you just did frustrated me, or that just made me so upset. So when I think about having a relationship with God, it should be far above that. Like, I should be able to tell him everything I'm feeling, because like you said, he already knows it. We're not
exactly.
taking him by surprise. Yes, exactly. We have the problem.
Right. And I think sometimes it's more about religiosity than it is about the relationship. And
exactly.
We need to stop and remember, I love what you said a few minutes ago, that from the very outset, you were talking with God about it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that the range of emotions was all over the board as it would be.
Yes. Yeah. And they still are. There are still days where I say, like, I'm just so thankful. I'm so grateful. The experience that has transpired ever since Miles's death, to the place where we are now, being able to share so much of our story and helping other people in these situations. But then there are days where I just really miss him and I just really wanted the earth. And I tell God that. I say, I don't know why you had to do it this way. I don't know why we had to be the ones. And he knows that. You know, he's expecting me to say it. But then I just tell him again, just give me that peace. Just remind me that you've walked this path and you've laid it out for me, and just take my hand and lead me toward the end. That's all I can do.
Yeah. Well, that is the best way to handle it. I'm sure that there are days when it doesn't feel quite that easy.
Yeah.
And there are other days when maybe it is easier, but that's the strangeness of grief, isn't it?
Gosh, yes. When people say it comes like a wave, you know, it's ebbs and flows, it's in and out. Some days your grief feels like a marble that you carry in your pocket, and some days it feels like the entire universe that just consumes you. And you don't know why. Sometimes there's nothing that triggers what you're feeling. Some days are better than others, but that's just for anyone.
Yeah. Jen, what surprised you the most about grief?
Oh gosh. I think just that you never know what you're going to feel from day to day. You know, it's been more than 2 years since Miles was born and since he left us. And there were even just the first few days in the hospital where I cried, but I felt so at peace. But then I came home and took my first shower, and my husband had to lift me out of the shower because I just collapsed. I was so overwhelmed by the loss. And then, you know, some days I feel really optimistic, and, you know, other days, even just a few days ago, I just didn't want to get out of bed because I just was looking at his photo and I just wanted him here. So I think sometimes looking from the outside, you think grief is a process that you're just continually on the way up, not realizing that it's really just more very up and down constantly.
Yeah, that is so accurate. You know, it's a really strange paradox, isn't it? Because you can have those days where you're very conscious of the pain on your grief journey.
Yeah.
You're very conscious of the loss, and it just feels like it can be a deep dark hole or a dark cloud that just kind of hovers there. But at the same time, and it's really difficult to explain it, you can have that peace and you can rest in that hope that we have, because we know the one who is hope, Jesus. And people probably have a hard time who have not been where we have all been,
right,
probably have a hard time trying to wrap their heads around, well, how can you experience joy and grief at the same time?
Yeah.
But you can.
You can. I mean, it's biblical. Joy is eternal, right? And happiness is fleeting. Happiness is a feeling. From moment to moment, but joy is everlasting. And so, like you said, I think it's hard for people who don't have that relationship with God, or they don't have that foundation to really understand that. Around the same time I lost Miles, a friend of mine from college lost her 6-month-old in a really tragic and just freak accident. And she, unfortunately, does not have that relationship. And so I see her grief journey, and it's so heartbreaking for me because she doesn't have that hope. She hasn't found that hope yet. So I try to continue to encourage her, and I try to lead her in that direction. And that's all I can do until she decides for herself that that's what she wants. But I pray for her constantly that she will find that, because I cannot imagine walking this path without God's strength, without his grace, and his mercy every day. I just can't even fathom how difficult this would be.
No, I completely agree with you. And I've talked to so many other people who have expressed the same thing. And having been there ourselves, I can remember saying early on, I cannot imagine how people who don't have a relationship with the Lord, how they survive something like this.
Yeah.
You know, because it's, people just can't imagine how incredibly hard it is. You know, another thing that I want us to touch on, I think sometimes in our culture, whether it's a miscarriage or whether it's a stillbirth, some people don't see that the same way as a child who died in some other way at an older age, whether it's a few months, whether it's a few years or many years later. Mm-hmm. They just don't see that grief as being anything similar.
It very much is. And not even just for me, but, you know, my sister's gone through a couple of miscarriages, even right before I had Miles. And several women I know personally have dealt with miscarriage or stillbirth, and they have horrific stories of how they were treated in the aftermath of all of that. And just like you said, where the baby is just not even treated like a human at all. And it just makes you so sick to your stomach. And it's unfortunate, because I think the people who have that perspective are the people who've never, ever endured that kind of loss. For me, you know, when you lose a child, whether it's through miscarriage or pregnancy loss or infant loss, what goes with the child is all your hopes and dreams for them. All your hopes and dreams for you as a parent, all your hopes and dreams as a family. And you get to lose out on all those I love yous that you never got to say, all those experiences that you never got to have. And so as much as you are grieving the child themselves, you are also grieving the future. And what you thought the future would have been with them.
Yeah, that is so true. And that's most often referred to as future grief.
Yeah.
And it happens whether it's a miscarriage or whether it is a stillbirth, or in our case, our son was 26 years old.
Yeah.
We all experience that future grief when we think about all of those possibilities and all of those plans that, you know, that parents just have, you know, for their child.
Yeah.
I think the other unfortunate part of that perspective is that it means that the ones who are grieving sometimes aren't afforded the same level of care and compassion and kindness as those who whose child died in a different way at a different age.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right about that. I know here in Ohio, especially, there is such a big push about mental health services. And unfortunately, there's been this neglect when it comes to the mental health of people who are experiencing loss. And I think, you know, when you talk about mental health across the board, there are so many different reasons why people may be struggling. And I know for me, I went into a very deep depression.
Not uncommon.
Not uncommon. Almost even fatal for me. And, you know, that would have been another significant loss for my family. And so we weren't given the resources. We weren't given any of that special care after losing Miles. That I think would have been really beneficial. And honestly, I can see why we do end up losing so many people to whether it's suicide or self-inflicted issues or issues with medication, drug addiction.
Right.
After going through this, I can see why that happens. And I think there needs to be a big change culturally when it comes to caring for people who are simply grieving. That's what it comes down to. that grief can turn into so much more. But if we address the grief and we address the people who are dealing with it and trying to learn how to live with it, we could change a lot if we just change how we take care of them.
Yeah, that is so well said.
I think that's one thing that Miles did for us was he really opened our eyes to how many people have been affected by pregnancy loss, infant loss, child loss of any age, even just the amount of people in our own ministry who we've known for years who had never talked about it before. As soon as we told our church members about Miles, a dozen of them came up and said, "I went through the exact same thing," and we had no idea.
They suffered in silence,
right? They suffered in silence for some of them for decades, which is heartbreaking to think about. But, you know, because of the position that I'm in, I had to be vocal about what I went through. Yeah. There were people who saw my pregnancy journey and they were expecting a pregnancy or a birth announcement. And I had to tell them, this is my reality. And so when I made that public, I was overwhelmed by the amount of people who I didn't even know, I've never met before, shared with me that they had also experienced pregnancy loss, infant loss, child loss, and hadn't talked to anybody about it.
Wow. Well, you know, that is, that to say it's commendable is an understatement. But for you, after what you had been through, to go public and share that, I'm sure has impacted so many parents who for so many years suffered in silence and maybe has given others the courage to be able to share their story. And because there's a lot of healing in that as we share our story instead of keeping it in. I can't imagine what it was like to have to walk through your grief journey at such a public level.
Yeah.
Because it was, I mean, I know you had shared with me earlier that you were able to because you were blessed with such good coworkers and people who were in management positions over you, that you had plenty of time. Let me reword that. You were given a lot of time to be able to pull back.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know that any of us could say plenty of time because that might still be ongoing.
Yeah.
But you were blessed to have that time. And, you know, if you're listening today and you're in a position to be able to help someone who's going through this, to do whatever it takes through those procedures with the insurance that your company provides, please do that for your employee because they need it more than you know. And if you will work with them and help them through that, they will be better employees when they come back.
Oh, that is so true. And I've always said, I know God placed me exactly where he did because he's made that so evident in so many different ways. But the coworkers I have, many of them we're friends outside of work. My boss was just so incredible through all of this. I mean, even after the insurance money ran out, they raised a GoFundMe. Family to be able to live comfortably while I took time away and just learned what my new reality was going to look like. They were so incredible through that process. And so I encourage anybody, whether you're a coworker, whether you're, you know, the director of a department, whatever it may be, please know and understand what that kind of grace means to someone who is enduring any kind of loss. I mean, I am just so grateful that I was able to have that time at home with my family, that I didn't have to put on a face and be on camera during that time, because I was not in that headspace. I could not fake my way through that. So that was essential for me.
It would be very difficult to put on a pretty face, as it were, and to make yourself presentable to other people when you're in that when you're in that space, I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing
grace,
that.
Grace of God.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But can you imagine having been in a position where you had to step back into that public eye just days or a couple of weeks afterwards? Because you know, a lot of people only get a week or two of bereavement time.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I cannot even fathom that. And you know, for me, it was healing physically from major surgery while also figuring out what life was going to look like after that. I had to tell my children that they weren't going to have a baby brother like they thought they were. My husband and I were trying to figure out our own individual emotions while also trying to heal as a couple, as parents. You know, my family still has the ministry, so my parents are grieving, but they still have to be there for an entire church full of people. So I cannot imagine having to step back into that. I was beyond fortunate to have the resources available to me. I was beyond blessed to have people who cared about me and me as a person before me as a news anchor. That was vital for me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Jen, before we talk about Miles' mission, there is someone listening today who is where you were a couple of years ago. What would you like to say to that mom or to those parents?
I would say keep moving forward. And so for me, the phrase that we use is soldier on, and that is because Miles's name means soldier. And so we say soldier on, and as difficult some days as that may feel, even if you can just put one foot on the floor, you've made progress. If you can get 2 feet on the floor, you're making progress. If you can move one step further than you did yesterday, that is progress. And sometimes progress means giving yourself grace to step back and to take the time to feel everything you are feeling, to scream if you need to scream, to cry if you need to cry, laugh if you want to laugh. Just because you're grieving, you can still laugh. You can still find those moments. And look to the others around you as kids. That's what kept me here, honestly. And that's what kept me and still keeps me moving forward. So find your why. Keep moving forward. And one thing my family has said from the beginning is that we are going to find purpose in our pain. And we are doing that each and every day. And God is making it so evident to me, the purpose in what our earthly pain is, but just soldier on. I know it looks dark and it looks dim and it looks impossible right now, but if I could do it, you know, here I am 2.5 years later, it is possible. It is possible.
Oh, that is so well said and such good counsel, Jen. Thank you for sharing that. So, as I mentioned a moment ago, I would like for you to tell us just briefly about Miles' mission, because your dad is going to be joining me, as I had alluded to earlier, on a future episode, and he can hardly wait to come and talk about Miles' mission. Yeah. And in addition to a book that he wrote not long afterwards. Yes. So I want you to introduce that, because this is Miles still making an impact.
Oh, and what an impact he's... I'm wearing my Miles' mission shirt today, actually. This is his little hand.
Are you?
Hand.
Yes, yeah. You are.
So that's his little hand. We took this from an actual photo of him. We had at the hospital. But yes, I won't give too much away because I know my dad is so excited to share. But not long after Miles's passing, my dad sat down and wrote his first ever book. And it is all about our journey from grief to gratitude. But he also really outlines a lot of what, as we kind of talked about earlier, what I didn't get personally as a mother. But what also we didn't get as a family when it comes to the systems in place, the hospital systems, aftercare, there was a lot that we didn't know until after we lost Miles was missing. Not even just for us, but for any family who is enduring pregnancy or infant loss. And so what we are doing is working to change that. So my dad felt very called to establish Miles's mission. And it is, my dad is the president, I am the vice president, and we have my mom and sister on the board of directors as well. And we are busy working to change these systems and to make sure there are no more gaps for families when it comes to when they're delivering in the hospital. We're working to get cuddle cots in hospitals all across the country, which these are devices that allows the baby to stay in the hospital room with you instead of having to be transported back and forth from the morgue, which is what I had to permission to see your child. But this will allow the baby to stay in the room with that grieving family, giving them a little more closure. And we're also working to change, you know, the fact that I had to stay on a maternity floor with a lot of other women who had healthy deliveries, and I had to hear babies crying. And
oh my gosh, that must have been so hard.
It was torturous. And so for 4 days, I had to live with that. And so we don't want that for any other family. So we're working to change that. We're working with legislators. We're working and pairing with a lot of different organizations from Indiana down to Georgia so far to provide bereavement bears and boxes with little keepsakes for families. My dad's book is included, Free As You're Grieving. But we want you to know that there is hope, and that even though there's pain right now, this is not going to be the end for you, and that there is peace on the other side. And so we've been really busy over the last year and a half, getting everything up and running, and my dad's in constant meetings, and we're holding all kinds of great events, but this is the purpose's name, and they're sharing Miles' story. And as a mom, I am just like beaming with pride that even though he never got to experience life on earth, so many people know his name and they know God through him. And so that's just a little taste of what we're doing. And I am just so overwhelmed in the best possible way. You know, I couldn't see this 2.5 years ago. I was down deep in the valley, but I'm on the mountaintop now, and it's clear, and I can see it now. And it's just, it's so incredible. And I'm so excited for what the future holds.
Oh, wow. When you mentioned earlier, just a few minutes ago, that you had found purpose, boy, did you ever find purpose. Yeah. It is so amazing what God can do when we just lean into him and trust him.
Yes.
Because in those early days, it doesn't feel like it, that in all things, God works together for good. And individually, some of those things don't taste very good. You know, it's kind of like when you're baking a cake. There are some ingredients that by themselves would be awful. But the end product is so incredible. And that's what you're describing.
Yeah.
And I love that you said, what joy it gives her to hear Miles's name.
Yeah.
And there is nothing that gives the parent who's lost a child greater joy than hearing other people speak their names.
Yeah.
Is that fairly accurate?
I think so. I mean, like I said, I didn't get to experience, like right now, my son's in first grade, so he's figuring out math problems. And when he gets one right, we all get so excited. And, you know, my daughter's learning, she wrote her name perfectly for the first time the other night. And so we clapped and we danced. I didn't get to have those moments with Miles. You know, I didn't get to experience those little milestones with him. So that kind of, to me, is like that comparison. Every time somebody says his name, every time somebody talks about Miles's mission and the legacy and the impact, those are those little moments for me that I get to just beam with pride. I'm so proud of my son and the impact that he's having on so many people. And he's not done. We're really only just started. So
You guys, so this proud. Is new.
Yeah.
That is so great. I love hearing what you guys are doing. And you guys have just, as you said, just scratched the surface. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to hearing more and more good things about Miles's mission. And for you, for those of you who are listening, I will have a link to Miles's mission in the summary of Jen's episode. So please check it out. It's a great website. It's well done. I think you will love it if you'll check it out. And all the things that she talked about and more can be found on that website. And you can see a little bit more about Jen's personal story on that website as well. So Jen, thank you so very much for being our guest today. It's been a pleasure and a delight to have you and to get to know you and to get to know your son, Miles.
You as well, Greg. And I just want to share the verse that we've been leaning on through Miles's mission that it just came to us so clearly about 3 months ago. It's Isaiah 61, starts with verse 2. And it says that he has sent me to tell those who mourn that the time of the Lord's favor has come. To all who mourn in Israel, he will give a crown of beauty for ashes, a joyous blessing instead of mourning of despair. In their righteousness, they will be like great oaks that the Lord has planted for his own glory. And so if you are grieving, just know that he is going to give you a joyous blessing as long as you lean into him, and he is going to use whatever pain you're feeling for his own glory. I honestly and I truly believe that.
That is so well said, Jen. And thank you so much for sharing that. What a great way to close out your episode today. Yep. Thank you, Jen.
If you find our podcast meaningful, we invite you to follow us so that you can automatically receive the latest episodes. Also, we'd like to invite you to contact us and talk with us about sharing your story on a future episode, because every story is important and matters to God. Please reach out via email at hope@emptychairendeavor.com. That's hope@emptychairendeavor.com. And as always, thank you so much for listening.